President Barack Obama's love for basketball is legendary. But what can we learn from that? Today, we'll take a look at the president through the lens of the game he loves so much. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'll talk with best-selling author and Sports Illustrated writer Alexander Wolf about his new book, The Audacity of Hoop, Basketball, and the Age of Obama. It is also our December membership drive here at Iowa Public Radio, the perfect opportunity for you to celebrate your love for public radio with an investment at 800-235-2665 or iowapublicradio.org. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. We have had athletic presidents in the past. Teddy Roosevelt was a boxer and loved to ride horses. Herbert Hoover made up his own sport and named it after himself. Dwight Eisenhower played 800 rounds of golf while he was in office. And of course, the Kennedy family touch football games are legendary. Barack Obama's game is basketball, and everybody knows that. Sports Illustrated writer Alexander Wolf has just published a book that examines our president through the game he loves so much. The book is The Audacity of Hoop, Basketball and the Age of Obama. And he will be at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City tonight at 7 o'clock. He's connecting with us right now through the studios of Middlebury College in Vermont. Hello, Alex.
Hi, Charity. Happy to be with you.
A lot of us know quite a bit about the biography of President Obama, but for those who don't know, Obama did not know his father well. His parents had split up shortly after he was born, but he was 10 years old. His father came from Kenya to visit him in Hawaii, and this is really the only living memory he has of his father. And there's this very pivotal moment. His dad gave him a basketball. Tell me what happened.
Right. He's 10 years old. Last time he sees him, the Christmas gift of a basketball, kind of surprising given that Kenya, where he was from, the game had no real traction. You know, it was more of soccer. And as the young Barack Obama is growing up, his mother spends lots of time in Asia as an anthropologist. He's being raised by his grandparents. He's grappling with his identity, and there are not many African-American men around. And he falls in with some pickup basketball players, starts to fall in love with the game, and it's this device, this thing that gets him through his adolescence.
Really, in some ways, helped him develop an identity as a black man. In what way?
Well, there are perhaps 100, 200 African-Americans in Hawaii at the time, a very multi-ethnic environment otherwise, but just not many African-Americans. The University of Hawaii at that time, though, had a great college team. And he got caught up in that, put a Julius Irving poster over his bed, as a lot of mainland kids might have. And when he went off to the mainland, it was something he took with him. Kept playing, made friendships through his future brother-in-law. Craig Robinson was actually vouched for as a worthy suitor for Michelle.
Yeah, we will talk about a very pivotal ball game that took place there. But I want to talk a little bit more about his high school career. Was he a star player in high school?
He was a very good self-taught player. But no, he didn't play much because his high school team was so good. There were two future NFL athletes on that team, and they won the state title. Obama didn't get a lot of playing time. It stuck in his craw. The very young coach there at Punahou School in Hawaii, who would later regret maybe not playing him quite as much as he did, was more by the book and was put off somewhat by Obama's playground style. So I think what happened was he had this unrequited relationship with the game, and that's one of the reasons he kept playing it as he went off to college and grad school and the time he made his bones in Chicago.
Now, when he was a high school student, as many high school players who spend a lot of time on the bench feel, he was really frustrated, and he was campaigning to try to get more time on the court, right?
Well, he once famously went into the coach's office and made the case for himself and a few other bench warmers. It wasn't just for him. And he's talked really frankly about that period in his life since. He looks back much more objectively. At the time, he thought the coach had something against him, but now says, you know, my game was very one-dimensional. I couldn't dribble with my offhand. And he points out it might have been because his father wasn't around to take him to the park to work on his offhand. So he doesn't hold any grudge about it. But he did have this racial identity he's working out, and he's been really frank about that. It's the game that's so identified with young black men. But there came a point as he grew up where he thought perhaps basketball was this misspent youth aspect to his life. And even as he's continued to play and follow the game, I think he's very aware that young black men sometimes see the shining star of an NBA career and they don't take care of other business at hand. And he said that. He said he reached some of these inflection points in his life and he had to put the game aside and get serious.
Much, much later on, he talked to his high school coach. What happened when they talked to each other?
Well, he'd been elected senator from Illinois, and he made a conquering hero's return to Punahou School in Hawaii. He's addressing this huge auditorium, and he spots his coach in the back and diffuses the moment. And Coach McLaughlin has told me that he was wondering how this would all go, you know, whether Barry Obama, as he was known then, really nursed a grudge. And the first thing Obama says from the dais is, "Coach Mack, is that you? I just want you to know I wasn't nearly as good as I thought I was." And that took the edge off the moment.
His coach has also said that he was really green when Obama was in high school. And he feels like if he'd been more seasoned, he probably would have played him more.
He said that indeed. He said that in those days he was a little insecure. He would play five, maybe six or seven if they had a lead. And that as he got more mature, he would have found a place for somebody like Barry Obama. He has said that no player of his ever loved the game more. Describes him anywhere on campus, walking between classes, dribbling a basketball. He would frequently go and play pickup ball with adults after regular basketball practice is how much he loved the game.
Now, when he went to Occidental College, he kind of toyed with playing college ball. What happened there?
Well, he played a lot of lunch ball pickup, and there's one professor there, an English professor who taught him, who said that Occidental's great contribution to American democracy was to persuade Barack Obama that he had no future as a basketball player. So he never actually played on the varsity. There are conflicting reports that he showed up, that he went through the sort of captain's practices in the fall of his freshman year. But in all the accounts of his time at Occidental, he suddenly became very serious about the world and began to plot a path east and to Columbia, where he eventually finished his undergraduate work.
And he always spent time on the court in these pickup games. And it seems that for him, that was something of a release from the very serious politics of race and you know, learning when he was in school and trying to figure out what his place was in the world. What do you think those pickup games meant to him?
Well, he said they were the places that he made his very closest friendships, black and white, in Hawaii and afterward. And all the accounts of him as a pickup player once he gets to Harvard Law School are of a guy who may have been self-taught, but had a kind of domesticated quality to his game. He was a guy who would diffuse tense situations, give people a pat on the rear, make sure the ball got distributed well, whoever had the hot hand would get the ball, almost this executive quality that we now see in him as a president, which is kind of an ironic arc. If you think about his origins as this self-taught guy who couldn't get his high school coach's attention because he wasn't disciplined enough. And then once he settles in Chicago, he's playing with people with real pedigrees. I mean, Ivy League all-stars and Division III players who I think even further his indoctrination to a more straightforward and buttoned-up game.
What do you think the value has been for him career-wise and as a politician to mix with people in this way? Where, you know, politics are set aside and people's careers are set aside. This is just fun.
Yeah, and it's something that I think, well, the people of Iowa, you have a really good window into this. You see these politicians traipse through every 4 years. And so much of what you see, even in these intimate retail situations like Iowa and New Hampshire, It's an image. It's something that's practiced, and handlers want you to see a certain side of a candidate. And I think with basketball and Obama, it's been that rare thing with a politician. You get to see really who he is. And when they rolled the game out in New Hampshire in 2007 and into 2008, and first had him playing with firefighters and patrolmen, it was really just to get exercise to do retail politics, but at a really informal level, instead of the glad handing, you know, at diners and lunch counters. And everybody in the campaign said, you know, we don't have to twist his arm. He wants to play, and these are long days, and he needs to clear his head. So it's a very relaxed and natural thing. And that natural quality has carried over into the presidency. When he fills out that bracket every March, he's doing something he really wants to do. He was criticized for it at the outset. He's continued to do it, and it happens to be something that millions of other Americans are doing. And I think that helps with the whole regular guy meme.
We'll talk more about basketball on the campaign trail and in the Oval Office in just a couple of minutes. I'm talking with Alexander Wolf. He has just published the book, The Audacity of Hoop, Basketball and the Age of Obama. He'll be at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City tonight at 7 o'clock, and we'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me is Alexander Wolf. He's just published the book, The Audacity of Hoop, Basketball and the Age of Obama. He also writes for Sports Illustrated. And he'll be at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City tonight at 7 o'clock. And just before the break, we were talking about the campaign trail and Barack Obama playing basketball on the campaign trail. And when they decided that he should start doing that, he could start doing that, what were some of the considerations that the campaign took into account?
Well, the very first thing, David Axelrod, who was his counselor, had a lot of experience introducing black politicians to largely white electorates, and he was very wary about introducing a basketball player, kind of sight unseen, who happened to be black. So he made sure that, say, in New Hampshire, voters there already had a decent sense of who this guy was before he would play basketball. But then it was fine. And the game, while we associate it with African Americans, I think, for all sorts of reasons, has become, certainly since the 2000s, a game that's flourished everywhere. It's a very much a millennial thing. The success of the San Antonio and Miami teams in the NBA has helped connect huge Hispanic audiences with the game. It's a very youthful game, and here was a president with a young family coming into the White House really for the first time since JFK, where you've had multiple kids occupying the White House, and this being vigorous and youthful and playing a game at a pretty high level that wasn't golf, that wasn't this sedentary thing. I think his handlers were smart enough to know that this was a way to signal, hey, this is a bit of a changing of the guard and a new generation.
Now, we kind of glossed over this earlier in our conversation. There was this moment when Barack Obama started dating Michelle Robinson, who, of course, later became Michelle Obama. And she engineered or set up this basketball game for her new boyfriend and her brother, Craig. And that was supposed to kind of take the measure of the man. Tell me about that.
Well, she had grown up in this house in Chicago where brother, older brother was a big player, and she would hear him and their dad talk about how you could tell someone's character from how they played the game. So she'd spent about a year with this guy, and it was fish or cut bait time in her mind. So, yeah, she suggested to her brother, can you take Barack out for a regular game with your friends and report back? And he had nothing but good things to say, that he passed when he should pass, he shot when he should shoot, and he wasn't such a suck-up that he passed all the time, especially to Michelle's brother. Basically, it was a good report, and things could proceed apace. Now, interestingly, Obama's been asked whether he subscribes to this theory that you can tell character from a game, and he subscribes to it only up to a point. He says you can tell part of somebody from that, but in a very Obama-esque way, he says, I'm not sure I'll go all the way. I'll split the middle on that and say that, you know, they're good people otherwise who have a hot head on the court, and you only get to see a little sliver of a person, maybe a key into their personality, but not the whole thing.
So when he was on the campaign trail, it seems like he was kind of doing the same thing with the American public. Check out who I really am when I'm on the basketball court. Although he has kind of said that you can't. But I mean, that is how the campaign used this.
Well, and particularly they used it in two states. I mean, I'm really struck by how the two reddest states he was able to flip to blue in 2008 were Indiana and North Carolina, two states that are huge basketball states and where he spent a lot of time actually playing the game. He scrimmaged with the North Carolina varsity. There was a famous wire photo that went out of him dribbling into the lane and going up in the air and challenging Tyler Hansbrough, who was the defending college player of the year. And then in Indiana, he played 3-on-3. He would stop in rural Indiana and play horse with voters. Clearly, this was not just by accident. And sure enough, in 08, he ended up carrying both of those states, probably the two most surprising states he did. So the game has been good to him, not just on the campaign trail, but even in office.
Now, sticking with the campaign trail a little bit, we have had other ball players run for president in the past, and Bill Bradley is one when he was running for president. And of course, his campaign didn't go nearly as far as Barack Obama's campaign. But Bill Bradley is quite the basketball pedigree, having played for Princeton and then in the NBA. And he didn't play any ball when he was campaigning. That was a very clear choice of his campaign.
That's right, Charity. Yeah. And the guy who was directing Obama's New Hampshire campaign in 08 had been with the Bradley campaign back in 2000, and he was struck at how rarely Bradley would jump into games. The young aides all wanted to play back in 2000, and they couldn't get the candidate to play with them because he was so eager to prove that he wasn't just a dumb ex-jock, that he was a legit policy guy. And then here they had this guy who'd been a bench warmer on his high school team, and he couldn't get enough. So I guess your relationship to the game as you grow older is very much tied into your early success at it. And basketball has that thing that golf kind of has too, which is you keep coming back to it to see if you can get that ball into that hole. You know, it's you always want to perfect your game, and both of the games can be pretty unforgiving.
I'm talking with Alexander Wolf. His new book is The Audacity of Hoop Basketball and the Age of Obama. And I am struck by what a risk it was for Obama to play so much ball. And there's one of these moments that you write about when he went on an international tour and he's in Kuwait and he's hanging out with the troops and he takes this three-point shot. And, of course, there's photographers all around. It was an opportunity to really kind of look like a fool. And he sinks the shot, but what a risk.
Well, he made the shot, so everybody says he has the magic touch. It probably wouldn't have been that big a deal if he'd missed. Shrug your shoulders and move on. But because he made it, and he made it without warm-up, he's wearing street clothes, he's wired for sound, the troops all give him an ovation, and it seemed to fit into a narrative of that summer. This was roughly the same time he shows up in Berlin for a speech, and there are hundreds of thousands of people. And he's given all sorts of accolades for it, and the poor McCain campaign doesn't really have much of a response other than to say, oh, he's camera hungry and disrespecting the troops, which didn't really ring true either. But if I'm the McCain campaign, I'm not sure I'd have any other recourse if the guy's sinking a three with no warm-up. So, yeah, the guy's had a lot of luck. I mean, even on the court, he has that kind of light-footedness. And even though he's not a great player, he has that ability to project, I belong here, I fit in. And he finds himself, particularly when he's in office, playing with a lot of guys who are better than he is. And that's a very presidential thing. I mean, you're sitting in the Oval Office, and you have to process the information you're getting from all these people who are smarter than you are, they're experts, and then make a decision. And I'm struck by that analogy, that when he was playing those pickup games early in his first term with Reggie Love, who had been a captain at Duke, and his Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, who'd been a co-captain at Harvard, that he's clearly not the best guy out there, but he finds a way to fit in.
One of the things during the campaign that, of course, his opponents like to focus on was the fact that he had a father who was from Kenya, that he had this strange name, and there were a lot of people trying to play up his foreignness or his otherness. And you really feel like basketball, not it didn't just humanize him, but in many ways it really Americanized him. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, and even his biographer, David Marinus, has said basketball connected the disconnected parts of him. If we had been seeing a black candidate for president playing a lot of basketball, say back in the 1970s or really even the 1980s, and perhaps we never would have seen a black candidate for president as successful as Obama then, but if we had, we probably wouldn't have seen as successful an effort to Americanize yourself through the game. But the game has come a long way. It's not really an African-American game anymore. It has, what, there are 130-plus international players in the NBA. You have now an NBA franchise that's wildly popular in Oklahoma City as well as in Brooklyn. It's really this idiom, this way we talk. I mean, expressions in the daily culture come from basketball. Even the smallest schools have a boys' team and a girls' team. So it's this way to just cut across all these lines. And I think we've seen it in him filling out these brackets every March. And early in his presidency, he got a lot of criticism for that.
Right. Well, yeah, in that first bracket he filled out, he got criticism from people who didn't think he should do it and criticism from people who were really mad at him for not filling out the women's NCAA March Madness bracket as well.
That's exactly,
so
exactly
on
true.
On both sides.
On both sides, and never failed to fill out a women's bracket after that, I might add. But then the most recent NCAAs, you saw virtually every Republican in Washington, whether it was Paul Ryan, go Wisconsin, Marco Rubio picking Florida to win it all, Jeb Bush putting out a bracket of his own. So I think there's a recognition that, yeah, this is just a regular American thing we do, whether we're Democrats, Republicans, black or white.
Now, in the White House, as you've already mentioned, he's continued to play a lot of ball. There have been some ups and downs. We'll talk about those. But how does that work when you're president?
Well, it doesn't really work.
Okay. I mean,
there were a lot of speculation, I suppose. A lot of people had, as he was taking residence in the White House, okay, what's he going to do? Is he going to tear out the bowling alley that Nixon had installed and put an indoor court in there? Or is he just going to show up with his Secret Service detail at some random Boys and Girls Club in greater D.C. and play? And what he did is he converted the South Lawn tennis court into a basketball court so he could play very privately there. And then occasionally he would go out, usually to a military facility somewhere near D.C., and play with his friends. But then there was this one incident, November 2010, where he took an elbow to the lip and had a dozen stitches as a result. And ever since then, he's been reluctant to play at that very high level. I mean, he'll still go play horse and do stuff for the cameras, but playing with Reggie Love and Arne Duncan and some of the people who would be assembled for these games, he just didn't want to give the State of the Union on crutches, I think was the calculation he made.
And that incident is known as Elbowgate.
Indeed. And the poor guy, Ray Desarega, who'd been a really good high school player in greater D.C. and was well connected with people in Obama's basketball circle, he had to go underground after that happened. And only a few years ago has he been willing to talk about the whole incident. I think everything's forgiven, but Ray was never invited back for any more basketball with the president. We'll just leave it at that.
So you've mentioned the president is a good player. He's not a great player. What are his strengths? What are his weaknesses on the court?
Well, he really doesn't have a right hand. He's a left-handed by nature. And he said that if he'd had a dad who might have taken him out to the park to work on his offhand and encourage him that way, that maybe he'd be a more complete player. And the picture in the book that I find one of the most affecting is a photograph that the White House photo office got permission to release to us because they don't like to let photos of the girls appear in public. But he's dribbling up the court with both Sasha and Malia. And he and the girls are both dribbling, are all dribbling with their right hand, which for Obama is his offhand. It's the hand that he never developed as a kid because his dad wasn't around. So this picture has him fulfilling his paternal duty and working on that offhand. And in addition to that point, it's a lovely photo because it has that kind of JFK, Camelot, Life magazine, John John and Caroline Kennedy under the desk in the Oval Office quality that I think caused a lot of people to look at the Kennedy White House in the same way that they look at the Obama White House.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Sports Illustrated writer Alexander Wolf. He's just published the new and very cleverly titled book, The Audacity of Hoop, Basketball, and the Age of Obama. He'll be at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City tonight at 7 o'clock. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest is Alexander Wolf. He's just published the book, The Audacity of Hoop, Basketball, and the Age of Obama, and it examines our president through the game of basketball, this game that he loves so very much. And Alex will be at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City tonight at 7 o'clock. And before the break, you were talking about this beautiful picture that has the president playing ball with both of his girls. They're running a drill. They're all dribbling with their right hand. And I was surprised to learn that somehow, in the midst of being president of the United States, he managed to coach one of his younger daughter Sasha's teams. How did that even work?
Well, presidential prerogative, maybe. He hasn't done it on a regular basis, but there were a handful of times he came to practice and was able to jump in for games. And it's something that Michelle very much encouraged. And I think that he's talked about it and pointed out how getting to see their improvement excited him as much as anything. I mean, we're talking about a guy who, as you pointed out, Charity, didn't even fill out a women's bracket early in his first term. And by his second term, you're starting to hear him talk about women's basketball and Title IX in a way that suggests to me that having daughters who really love to play, particularly the younger of the two, Sasha, had affected him, which is something that a lot of Title IX dads with daughters who play sports, I think will probably recognize that phenomenon. So, yeah, he found the time. Reggie Love, his personal aide, was right there on the bench with him. You know, getting to see at least one of his two daughters get excited about playing. And this particular youth team also had the granddaughter of Vice President Biden. Maisie Biden was on the very same team. So that's a trivia question for the ages.
Absolutely. So we were talking about the president's game earlier, and so he doesn't do well with his right hand. We've heard earlier that he's a passer when he takes a shot when he's got a shot, but he passes when he doesn't. What else do you think we can learn about him from looking at his game, both a team game and also when he plays one-on-one?
Well, the thing that I had great fun with doing this book was extrapolating from a little basketball clue, something larger than that. And I do think the way he plays basketball, kind of balancing the individual and the collective, there's a passage in The Audacity of Hope where he talks about that. That the great challenge of democracy is, you know, to retain as much freedom as possible while also looking out for the collective welfare of your society. And a basketball team has to find that golden mean between the two, between total freedom you know, that collective organization that you have to have. So there's that. And there's also been a kind of fun pattern to the way his two terms or four quarters of office have unspooled. I was struck that just before the last 2 years of his presidency, which is to say after the 2014 midterms, he had a cabinet meeting. The Republicans had done very well in those midterms. And he distributed a card to everybody in the room that said, we're about to enter the fourth quarter. Very interesting things happen in the fourth quarter. He didn't say anything about basketball in this message, but he used that particular analogy. And upon learning that, it occurred to me that if you look at his presidency, there's almost a kind of a front-running NBA player quality to his presidency. That first quarter, he came out, you know, the wind at his back and did pretty well, got the major domestic initiative passed, and then the second quarter began to drift, did get reelected, so he got a second half. And then third quarter was kind of disastrous. But then the fourth quarter has been a little more focused with some more achievements to point to. So there's even a kind of basketball arc to these what will be 8 years when he's done.
Well, and you point out that the basketball metaphors, I mean, there have always been a lot of sports metaphors in politics, but the basketball metaphors that everyone has been using during the Obama administration have really, really been almost omnipresent.
They have, and I think where it almost got to the point of ridiculousness is there was that first debate with Mitt Romney in the 2012 campaign that everyone will remember. Obama didn't do well, and Romney did really very well. And apparently in the preparations for that, one of Obama's coaches said, oh, you should regard this kind of the way the old Loyola Marymount coach, Paul Westhead, looked at playing basketball, which was score as many points as you can and don't worry about defense. And Obama let all these countercharges from Romney go unrebutted and came out the worse for it. So I think that particular basketball strategy got thrown out the window for the next debate.
So how did this book come about? Because the idea of publishing a book that examines a sitting president's basketball playing skills and basketball playing experiences, I could see that being a little bit of a hard sell. What made you want to do this?
Well, I got the assignment after he was elected from Sports Illustrated, my day job, to write about the president-elect and this game, because already we knew that it was a big part of who he was. He'd used it in the campaign. He played with another one of our writers, actually, in Spencer, Iowa, at a YMCA just before the caucuses in 2007. The last time anybody was going to get that kind of access to him was on that YMCA floor. So we knew that this was a big part of who he was. So upon turning that story in and it runs, I say to myself, well, what's going to happen when he's president? Is this game going to continue to be a part of him to the same extent? So I began to take notes when things would happen. And then, sure enough, there were examples that occurred during that first term. And so I said to myself, okay, well, he'll need to be a two-term president. If he wins in 2012, there is probably a book here, especially because there were so many wonderful official White House photos of him around the game, playing the game with players from the NBA and elsewhere. So he did get elected, and the official White House photos, because you and I and all taxpayers have paid for them, are free to use editorially. So it just seemed like everything, text and images, were there for the taking. And I rolled the dice a little, figuring that bring the book out with, say, 15 months to go in his presidency and hope that maybe not too much happens in those last year and a few months.
A few things will probably happen. But what, in doing this research, what surprised you the most? Because, of course, a lot of this has been very much in the news, and we've seen these images. But were there surprises?
Well, I didn't realize the extent to which basketball played a role in getting the health care law to really work. If you'll recall, when the health care law was implemented, we had the terrible rollout of the website. And there was this moment where pundits in Washington were saying, this thing's a turkey and isn't going to succeed. They need 10 million new signups to make the numbers work. And that was in roughly October. And fortunately, the October to March, the signup period synced up perfectly with the NBA season. So Obama starts calling in favors with people like Alonzo Mourning, who had had kidney disease, and Magic Johnson, who was HIV positive, and they do these very effective PSAs urging people to sign up. LeBron James, Kobe Bryant go to social media and do pretty much the same thing. I didn't realize how much basketball had played a role in that, but probably the biggest surprise anecdote-wise was to learn Michelle Obama says that it was Barack's mother who was the biggest trash talker in the family, that she would trash talk during games of Scrabble when she was alive. So when Obama does talk a little bit in games, which he's known to do,
right,
we now know the source of it.
You break down not only Obama's basketball skills, but what you call the best basketball playing cabinet in history. Do you think that people's basketball skills had something to do with them making those connections with the president and becoming part of the cabinet?
Well, I do think the Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, he's somebody that Obama got to know through basketball in Chicago. And he became the Chicago Public Schools chief. So certainly he had credentials for the secretary's job. But they got to know each other first as basketball friends. And it was from there that their friendship blossomed. I think in a lot of other cases, it was something they had in common. Women in the cabinet have played Samantha Power, Susan Rice, Mary Jo White, something they could talk about, bond over. And basketball is maybe a little bit more of a Democratic sport if you were to assign it to a party, whereas football might be a little bit more of a Republican sport. So it's not all that surprising that people in Obama's orbit have some conversancy with the game.
How do you think the way that the president has embraced basketball, celebrated his love of basketball publicly, used basketball in his campaigns, pursued it while he was in the White House, how he's used it for photo ops and making connections with people, how do you think that's going to influence future campaigns?
Well, I think this is work because it's clearly sincere. This is what he loves, and he's not putting on an act. In the same way that Dwight Eisenhower loved to play golf, and wasn't that the perfect game for the 1950s? You had this guy who played 800 rounds of golf while he was in the White House, but the 50s were this conformist decade where after World War II, that's all anybody really wanted to do was to be able to play golf, even if you didn't, you know, just have the time, the leisure. So there will be another age, I suppose, some president in the future, as amazing as it might seem given American history, that soccer might be the sport of choice of some future president. But I can see that day coming because soccer is getting its hooks into America. It's really a way to bond with the people. And even as the president has drifted off to golf here in the second term, in part because he doesn't want to bloody his lip again, and in part because he's a guy who grew up in Hawaii, outside all the time, and golf is the one time he can really get outside. I think people will always associate basketball with him as something that was real and sincere. And there is something to be said for that. So much is artificial in politics and is the architecture of consultants. And a president who can find anything, a sport or some other avocation to bond with people on an authentic level, I think it's going to be a weapon in their arsenal.
And what's the main thing you want people to take away from this book?
Well, I hope people will linger over the photos. There are more than 125 of them in there, and I've never done a book as driven by photos as this is, so no author's going to sit here and tell you or anyone they don't want you to read their words. But if people could read the words by the light of the photographs and just check some of the expressions on the president's face and other people's faces in some of these pictures. Pete Souza has had a front row seat for history for now almost 7 full years, and I can't tell you how lucky I feel to be able to use so many of his great images in the book.
Alex, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you, Charity. My pleasure.
Alexander Wolf is the author of The Audacity of Hoop, Basketball and the Age of Obama. He will be at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City tonight at 7 o'clock. This is Talk of Iowa.